Welcome to Ideas and Issues. I'm Hila Follett, Professor of Philosophy at East Tennessee State University, your host for this program. My guest this evening is Don Marquis, Professor of Philosophy at the University of Kansas, and we're going to be discussing abortion.
Thanks, Don.
Glad to be here.
Let's begin. Your view about abortion, as I understand it, you hold that abortion is wrong, certainly in the vast majority of cases. And to that extent, at least, your position could be described as very similar to what people would have heard of when they hear the pro-life position.
Right.
Yet, you think there's something wrong with the pro-life position, at least as it's standardly discussed in the popular press. Could you explain to us what you think is wrong about it, and then we can talk about how your view develops?
Well, one of the things that's wrong with the pro-life position, as it's discussed in the popular press, is that people who are pro-life tend to put a lot of stress on the humanity of the fetus, or they want to say, well, the fetus is a living human being, or they talk in one way or another about the fetus's biological characteristics. And such people have been criticized by pro-choicers for making simply an unsound inferential leap from talking about the biological characteristics of the fetus to saying, well, therefore the fetus is truly human, where now they're talking about the moral properties of something. And pro-choicers are unanimous in condemning this move because they say, well, it's just an equivocation on the term human. And there surely is something to that criticism. What I've tried to do in my own views is construct an argument that gets us to pro-life conclusions, but without making the unsound inferential leap.
All right, so what you want to do then is you want to identify what it is that makes it wrong to kill a normal adult human being.
Right.
And then you want to ask whether fetuses have that same characteristic.
Sure.
Okay.
We have to do that. People who argue about abortion have been, it seems to me, remarkably sloppy on both sides in offering anything like a tenable account of why it's wrong to kill. And it seems to me that unless we understand why it's wrong to kill Hugh LaFollette or Don Marquis or some standard adult human being, we aren't going to come to much understanding of why it's wrong to end the life of a fetus or why it's permissible to end the life of a fetus one way or the other. So I've got to have some sort of at least truncated theory of the wrongness of killing on which to base our views about abortion.
Okay. Well, let's begin there then. What's wrong with killing Hugh LaFollette?
Well, what's wrong with killing Hugh LaFollette?
Maybe that's a tough question to answer.
In my view, what's wrong with killing Hugh LaFollette it seems to me the answer to that question is, I think, intuitively pretty obvious once you think about it. We think it's wrong to kill Hugh LaFollette because killing Hugh LaFollette deprives Hugh of his life. But what we mean by that is, when we think about it, it's not that, after all, we deprive you of your past life. It's that we deprive you of that future life that you would have lived had we not killed you. But not only that, but it's not just your biological life that we're concerned about, because we would think, I suspect, that it would be just about as bad to kill Hugh LaFollette as it would be to injure him in such a way that he was in a permanent coma. So it's the future life experiences which we think are important. That is to say that we think are valuable about your future, and that we should not deprive you of that. And furthermore, experiences have to be valuable experiences. I mean, if you were in some kind of situation where you were suffering intolerable pain, let's suppose you were trapped in a truck and the truck was burning and you were going to suffer some you were going to burn to death, and you're in agony. If somebody comes by and shoots you to deprive you of that sad fate, we probably wouldn't think they'd done anything terribly wrong. So it seems to me that when we deprive somebody of their life, it's got to be their experiential life that we're talking about. It's got to be their future life that we're talking about. And there has to be something valuable about that. So I've just sort of called that a future of value. Or to put it in other ways, what's wrong to when we kill somebody is that we deprive them of a future like ours. Since we think of humans as having valuable futures, even though we all realize that different people value different things about their lives.
Okay, so the idea is there are things that I want to do, there are relationships I want to have, there are places I want to go, and part of what's wrong with killing me is that I can't do those things.
Yes, that's almost correct. What's really important, it seems to me, is not so much that you want to do them now, it's that you will want to do them when you get to the appropriate age, so that it would be wrong to kill you, not just because of, it's of course important that that you want to do certain kinds of things, but when you are 70, and obviously you're far from 70, you will enjoy things that you don't think about a whole lot now. You'll enjoy your grandchildren, you'll enjoy retirement, you'll have different interests, maybe doing volunteer work in retirement and so on and so forth. And these may be things that you get a lot out of, but you don't think, perhaps, at the present stage of your life, that you will enjoy those things. So it's of some importance, actually, to the theory that we think it's wrong to deprive people of things not just that they enjoy now, but that they will come to enjoy as part of a normal human lifespan.
Okay. Now, could you say a little bit more about why you think we ought to embrace what you call the future like ours view? I mean, you sort of stated what it is.
Right.
Why do we adopt that view?
Well,
then we'll talk about how it applies to the issue of abortion.
Well, I think that we should adopt the view because it seems to me that of the views that are out there, it's the one that best explains why we have the views about killing that we do if we don't think about abortion yet. That is to say, it explains why we think it's wrong to kill people, why we think it's wrong to kill suicidal adolescents, even though they don't want to live. It explains why we think it's wrong to kill people who are depressed. It explains why we think it's wrong to kill people such as you and myself. It explains why we think it's wrong to kill infants who may not have thought about their futures at all, or even perhaps have the capacity to think about their futures. It explains why we feel quite differently about ending the life supports on somebody who's permanently unconscious. It explains why there's a lot of sympathy for Jack Kevorkian. Although we may be unhappy about some of the things, some of the ways he carries out what he does, nevertheless, there are a lot of people out there who feel, well, if somebody's really ill and they're really suffering and their life is just miserable for them and there are no prospects of improvement, it wouldn't be a bad thing for their life to be over. And helping them do that would be an act of mercy rather than an act of wickedness.
Okay.
So it's a theory that it seems to me handles cases pretty well, and it's a theory, it seems to me, that agrees with people's intuitions about what it is about killing that makes it wrong. I mean, we want a theory that shows why the person who's killed is victimized. I mean, it's not wrong for me to kill others basically because of what it does to me, if I were the killer. It's wrong to kill others, or even it's not wrong to kill others because of what we do to their friends. It's the victim who's basically wronged, and we want a theory that that explains the wrongness of killing in terms of the wrongness basically to the victim.
Okay, and in fact, this ties back to the very first issue about the standard pro-life arguments. What the pro-life view standardly says is what's wrong is it's wrong to kill a biological human being.
Right.
And the examples you've given suggest that sometimes, at least, perhaps it's not wrong to kill a biological human being, and so that's
right.
Not the proper explanation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and not only that, but sometimes it may be wrong to kill somebody who's not a biological human being at all.
Okay.
So, I mean, somebody lands on your front yard from outer space someplace, and let us suppose that they have, as I say, a future like ours, but they aren't biologically human at all. I mean, biologically, they're something entirely different. I think we would think it would be wrong to kill them.
Okay. All right. Let's pause briefly for the benefit of any listeners who may just be tuning in. I'm Hugh LaFollette. This is Ideas and Issues. Today, I'm speaking with Don Marquis, professor of philosophy at the University of Kansas, and we're discussing abortion. You've described the future like ours, you, and perhaps the implications are fairly clear to the listener, but spell them out. What are the implications of adopting the future like ours view for abortion, as you understand it?
Well, the implications are that just as we believe that it's wrong to kill infants because they have futures like ours, even though they don't desire their futures, we should think, if the theory I hold is true, that it's wrong intentionally to end the life of a fetus because it has a future like ours. And indeed, it has a future. There's at least one fetus. Well, let me put it this way. There are at least two fetuses, or at least were at one time, that had futures exactly like Hugh LaFollette's and Don Marquis's. And those were the fetuses who we once were. Exactly like the Little Too Strong, actually their futures encompass more because the future of those fetuses encompassed our past lives also. But if it's true that it's wrong to kill Hugh LaFollette because Hugh LaFollette has a valuable future, then of course it would have been wrong to abort Hugh LaFollette for the same reason. And if it's wrong to kill Don Marquis because Don Marquis has a valuable future, then of course it would have been wrong to have aborted Don Marquis for exactly the same reason. So we can, since we believe in general it's wrong to kill adult human beings because they have valuable futures, then it would be wrong to have aborted those human beings for the very same reason.
Obviously, one of the questions or objections which someone might raise to your position is that what distinguishes Hugh LaFollette now from the fetus that ultimately developed into Hugh LaFollette is that I have interests. And the fetus that developed in me didn't have any interest at all. How would your view respond to such an objection?
Well, the notion of having an interest is ambiguous. We can talk about things that we take an interest in, and in order to take an interest in something, we have to have something going on psychologically in us, obviously. So one way of talking about interest is in terms of what we take an interest in. But there's another way of talking about interest where we talk about the best interests of people, where we're talking about something which, at least roughly, but I think only roughly, translates into talking about their well-being. And we can talk about fetal interest, it seems to me, in the sense of talking about the well-being of the fetus when we're thinking of the fetus as simply a stage in the life of a biological human. So I don't have any problems at all in talking about the interests of the fetus as long as we realize that we're not talking about anything that the fetus cares about. But this is not an uncommon usage. There's a lot of literature about in the medical ethics of treating newborns who may be have something wrong with them, and the question is how do you make these medical decisions? And people have been talking for years and years and years about making decisions in the best interest of the newborn. Now that idea of interests surely can't be necessarily pegged into anything that the newborn cares about. It's we're thinking of the best interests of the newborn in terms of the best interests of the human being, where we're referring to the newborn as simply a stage in the life of that human being. Well, we can do the same thing with fetuses.
Okay. Well, now, relatedly, what some people might say is that what distinguishes myself from the fetus that developed into me is that I'm conscious. I mean, I think it's a related point, but slightly different point. I'm conscious, I'm aware,
sure.
And that the fetus, at least the very early fetus, is not. Because, I mean, presumably we're not just talking about late fetuses. Mm-hmm. We're talking about fetuses at any point after the time of conception.
We sure are.
Okay.
And my response to that is that, well, after all, if Hugh LaFollette walks out of this room and gets run over by a truck and ends up in the hospital unconscious, we may think it's terribly important to keep Hugh LaFollette on life supports, and the reason is that the physicians say, well, you know, he got hit hard in the head and there's a lot of brain swelling and he's not going to wake up for about 2 weeks until the brain swelling goes down. But when he does wake up, he'll be as good as new. So we think, well, sure, we ought to keep Hugh LaFollette alive because he has a future like ours. And we would say this even though Hugh LaFollette is at the present time not only unconscious but incapable at this moment of being brought back to consciousness at all. So we're willing to wait, and in the case of fetuses, we can wait too.
Okay. All right, the last objection I can imagine someone raising to this view is that how do you decide where the being exists that has a future like mine? For instance, I can imagine someone saying that a woman saying, it's that time of the month, the egg has been passed down the fallopian tube, it's capable of being fertilized. If it's fertilized, it'll be a brown-haired boy born in September.
Right.
And if I don't fertilize it, then what I'm doing is depriving this being of a future like ours. Mm. And since most of us would think that people don't have an obligation to get pregnant at every turn, that perhaps there's something wrong with your view. Mm. That's an objection I can imagine someone raising.
Right, and it's a good objection to raise because it's the tendency for all pro-life or anti-abortion views is to, they're always in danger of, if I may put it this way, making too much killing wrong. Standard pro-life views have this problem, and you might think that my view has it also. I probably should explain the reason standard pro-life views have this problem is that we can describe things like human cancer cell cultures, which are both human and alive. It's plainly not wrong to end their existence. You can grow human cancer cells in the laboratory, and because cancer cells multiply, they stay alive for long periods of time. You wouldn't be wronging the cancer cells by ending their existence. So the problem with the standard pro-life view is that it makes too much killing wrong, if I may put it that way. And people think, well, my view would make contraception indeed deliberately abstaining from conception wrong. It seems to me that it doesn't, and for the following reason. The problem about abortion is the problem of whether fetuses, those particular individuals we call fetuses, have the same moral standing that you and I have, or whether they have the same moral standing as the lamp on the table. We don't think it's wrong to end the existence of the lamp on the table. At least it isn't wrong. It doesn't wrong the lamp. It may wrong the person who owns the lamp because it takes away their property, but it doesn't wrong the lamp. So are fetuses individuals like the lamp or like us? That's the basic problem of abortion. And it seems to me that when we talk about contraception, we don't have a definite individual that has a future that we could, that has a future that we could deprive it of, so that we can talk about the egg, but we can talk about the sperm also being deprived of a future. We can talk about the particular sperm that would have combined with the egg being deprived of a future. Or we can talk about all of those sperm in an ejaculate deprived of their chance of a future. Or we could talk about various combinations of sperm and egg and think of them as individuals somehow that are deprived of a future. And you, one can talk this way because, after all, in order to be an individual, the parts don't have to be physically contiguous. And the difficulty at the period of conception is, it seems to me, we don't have a definite individual to talk about. We just don't. It's not that there's no future, if I may put it that way. It's that there's no particular individual that we can identify as the victim. And therefore, and it seems to me that's a radically different situation from the situation after conception, when you have a particular biological individual who is precisely the individual who is being deprived of the future. It seems to me that an assumption I'm making about victimhood is that something has to be a victim. It can't be part of our choice that something is a victim. It has to be, one's being a victim has to be given independently of the choices we make, if I may put it that way.
Okay. Well, actually, that raises really perhaps the last objection which would come up. You use the term the choices we make. Mm-hmm. A large number of women, I think, would say the issue here is not one of the status of the fetus at all, but the choice of the mother. The mother is not just a container of the fetus. In some sense, she is the creator of the fetus.
Sure.
And that the relationship between the fetus and the mother is different than a living being that just happens to be inside of her. And therefore, she should have the choice of whether the fetus is brought into the world. How do you respond to the pro-choice view that says you just can't deprive women of the choice over such an important matter?
Well, everything else being equal, of course, we shouldn't. I mean, we live in a free society. People ought to have as much liberty as they can have consistent with moral concerns. But liberty isn't absolute. We don't want to grant me the liberty to kill Hugh LaFollette or to kill anybody else, any other human being. And so the question, liberty is always constrained by moral considerations. And in this case, it's constrained by the fact that it looks like we've got a pretty decent argument for the view that the fetus is a human being with the same moral standing that you and I have. And if that's so, then restriction on choice is wrong for the very same reason that it's wrong, it's certainly all right to restrict your liberty or my liberty to kill somebody else.
Okay. Very quickly, then, you would support, for example, an amendment to the Constitution that would prohibit abortion, except perhaps in a few cases?
The question of how you go about implementing this view legally, I think is, well, it isn't a question I thought a lot about. I mean, okay. I'm a philosopher by profession, and I worry about that issue primarily. My quick answer is yes.
Okay. All right. That'll do for now. Thank you very much for being with us this evening. I've been talking with Don Marquis, professor of philosophy at the University of Kansas. This is Hugh LaFollette for Ideas and Issues. Good evening.